that also in terms of management and marketing, you know, we need to create narratives which are evocative of our identity, which show our personality, and that rely on the behind the scenes. So what's the unique way we do the things that we do, how we do and why we do, not to see, because it's easy that customers see what we do and even how we do, not? But the reason behind what we do and how we do, it's important not to show, including these behind the scenes processes that not easy to see at some points.
I'm very pleased to invite my guest today is Dr. Francesc Fuster-Fornere. He is from the professor at the Department of Business at the University of Girona in Spain, which is a very interesting tourist destination by itself already. His research is focused on food and rural marketing and tourism. Particularly, as he has studied the connections between authenticity, food heritages and identities, landscapes and landscapers, regional development, rural activities, street food and tourist experiences. He conducts applied research on the role of gastronomy in relation to mass media as a driver of social change. Welcome, Francesc. Thank you very much for joining us today.
Hi, Samerik. Many thanks. And it's a real pleasure being here. I'm very happy to have this conversation with you, and also hope that all the people listening to us will enjoy our conversation and discussions today.
I'm sure they will. I'm sure the audience is very cued in to these topics, and I'm very much looking forward to see their comments and questions and their observations on the content that now we are discussing. So, but let's get started. First, I think for our audience to get some background, can you tell me about what inspired you to have a focus on food, gastronomy, in relation to marketing a destination with platforms like Instagram and TikTok?
Well, that's a difficult question, and it should not be, but it is. I've been working on food, you know, as a topic for a few years ago, since I started my my master's thesis, and then after that with my PhD. And I've been working with food as an element of identity, as an element of culture, also as an element that connects landscapes and lifestyles. And there, of course, I've been working also with my colleagues as well with the analysis, you know, of how we create or we award value to food, you know, through tourism, and how this can also help revitalize and can contribute to the economic, of course, but also social well-being of communities, you know, especially in the countryside. And then as part, you know, of this analysis based on both product and marketing strategies, we've also developed an interest, you know, in how companies and destinations create this connection with users, visitors, customers through the social media platforms, you know, and that was the starting point, you know? So we specialized on food, and then as part of this analysis, you know, on the strategies that food producers and destinations developed around food, we started also to analyze, you know, how this food is communicated, is used as an element of storytelling in social media.
Yes, very good. I mean, now the barrier to post something on social media is so low that it actually, you don't need to have high investments. And so any cafe can actually make a unique, as long as you have the unique story and there's authenticity there, they have an ability then to reach a very wide audience. So it's one, a very powerful way of telling their unique story to the customer. And I thought now in with our discussion today, we will take two different routes to how certain destinations are handling this. We will start with United Arab Emirates, Abu Dhabi. I think there's maybe Dubai involved there. And you have published several research papers and articles on these subjects on luxury hotels in UAE, but also bakeries in Catalonia. And I'd like to learn and understand from your insights on the role of food in tourism and role of tourism in food, starting with UAE, where visual storytelling has been taken to a very high level. So what kind of visual content, as per your research, resonates most effectively with consumers looking for those luxury dining experience?
Yeah, well, as part of this research, so I've been collaborating with a colleague in Dubai, with she's Noella Michael, no, and we have developed together this analysis, no, of these visual narratives in the social media strategies of luxury hotels in the United Arab Emirates, and here there are different elements, no, that the hotels builds on, not to create these emotional bonds with customers and also to develop this attraction factor, no, and probably the one of the most relevant elements is gastronomy, no, and how the gastronomy experience within the structure of the hotel is valorized, no, as a way through which we can protect and promote the local identity, for example, through traditional dishes or traditional both foods and drinks, and then also how this can be recreated, no, as part of a luxury component, no, because here we are merging this identity, no, embedded the local culture in the local heritage with a specific type of service, which is the luxury hotel, which also has a specific target of people, and where we need to create, no, a different senses, a different meanings, where we have observed, no, that, for example, the contents are based on elements, no, for example, specific products that can convey this luxury component, but also dishes, and also here how this is transferred, no, to feelings of sophistication, feelings of prestige, but without forgetting the notion of authenticity, which still remains, no, as the core center of this type of product.
Yeah, I mean, considering that these United Arab Emirates is a basically Arab destination with a very strong national identity. However, there are hundreds of, maybe thousands of restaurants and cafes that are from different nationalities, and they are bringing a different international food culture into this destination. And the time I was there, I was surprised of certain cafes and restaurants I never heard of that were becoming very famous, and they were nothing to do with Arabic, but they brought some luxury elements from the continental Europe. They obviously from Spain, they brought some very famous chefs, and also from other Southern European continents. What are the most surprising insights regarding consumer engagement with luxury gastronomic content on social media that emerged from your research?
Yeah, here we gather some interesting issues. No, and one refers to the previous comment that you made, no, because we found that, of course, the local identity is part of this visual narrative, but it's also common that this local inspired gastronomic heritage is combined, no, with international flavors. So there is a lot of fusion, no, with also, of course, continental Europe, but also Asian flavors, also Central American traditions, no, that are included in the dishes. So it's a thing where the gastronomy also sets a dialogue, no, between the local authenticity, the local based culinary identity, and then the international flavors, because also the hotels are targeting, no, a specific as I mentioned, specific audiences, and they have, of course, a global reach, no, within the customers. But specifically, no, in something that I would like to highlight in terms of this engagement of the users is that the hotels try to recreate a full scent, no, of luxury through the gastronomy. No, for example, I remember a picture where you got a table full of dishes. I mean, like a banquet, and then in the background you could see the sunset. And then also in one of the sites there was a violinist, also creating, no, a full stage of luxury, where of course the food is important, but not only the food, no, the atmosphere, the lighting, but everything that surrounds, no, the place where we eat the food literally is also relevant, not to create this this luxury.
Yeah. Considering now the authenticity in luxury experience, how can like these restaurants balance the authentic representation of their offering with their need for a highly curated aesthetic on social media, like you mentioned, you have the sunsets at the violins or the harps playing in the background and so on.
Yeah, sometimes I suppose, no, that it's difficult not to find the balance, no, between the food per se and the way you need to create this this engaged storytelling, no, on social media. But I think that the most important thing, no, that is that here we do not keep the focus on the gastronomy, no, in this case. So if we use like a blue cheese, no, as an element that can create this luxury environment, then how we surround, you know, the experience around the blue cheese or the lobster or the tea ceremony, it doesn't matter, not the example, but the way, you know, we surround the landscape that is part of this food experience is also important. Not only the natural landscape, of course, there are lots of pictures where they promote, you know, the own hotel. No, you can see like different experiences within the cafeteria of the hotel, next to the swimming pool, in the own room, no, which is also, of course, a place where you can really promote luxury, no, the own luxurious room, and then you have the dishes, no, inside the room. So the gastronomy discourse, no, also revolves around own facilities of the hotel, no, the hotel and the environment, natural environment, but also the facilities within the environment, which also create different points of consumption of this food.
Yeah, but a very important part in the social media is that the user-generated content, how they perceive this sense of luxury. What are your observations on or comment on the influence of the user-generated content?
Yeah, here in the analysis, we are focused only on the supply side perspective, but we also have an analysis of the pictures which generated more feedback, more likes and more comments. And here, the pictures that usually generate the highest level of feedback are those which include beyond food, no? Like the examples that I just shared with you, no? So you have a specific, let's say, the gold cappuccino, no? But you have the gold cappuccino within the framework of the cafeteria, no? Or you have a fruit-based breakfast, but within the framework of the sea, no? And here, yes, again, no, this is where also the customers feel, no, that they are close to the food, but also close, no, to where they are enjoying the food.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, this is maybe if there's one single picture that resonated to me about the Dubai or Abu Dhabi was this gold cappuccino or gold latte, where there was this a little bit of gold put in, and somebody was so fascinated that they only went to the hotel because they want to experience this I think it was Emirates Palace, in fact, that they want to experience this and take a picture and show to their friends. So it was sort of a wow moment for them.
Yes, and this is another of the drivers, you know, that we found the analysis, you know? So I mentioned about sophistication, but it's also about novelty, you know, and how we can generate experiences that were not experienced before, no, and then of course novelty also relates to hedonism, no, in this case of products and what's the pleasure we find, no, in this novelty. And of course the gold cappuccino, no, fits with both, no, the novelty in the sense that we are not used, no, to have a cappuccino with a little bit of gold on top, and then the moment, no, the pleasure of the moment as a source of hedonism, no, that it's embedded in the gold cappuccino as well.
Yeah, yeah. How do you foresee the trends in social media marketing, particularly in luxury gastronomy? How is it evolving in the future? I mean, I noticed a lot of the top chefs, in fact, they are very active on Saturday cooking at their private kitchen for their audience and all kinds of things. What have you seen?
Yeah, so actually we're involved in another project, you know, analyzing these social media contents from both perspective. And here, as a part of, we did a series of interviews with chefs, in specifically here in Catalonia, you know, for another project with another colleague. He's Esther Noguer Junca, And as a result, no, of these interviews and also of the analysis of social media that we did in parallel, we realized that, I mean, they say that the content that will lead, no, the future interest from customers refer to the these non-planned moments, no. So as you mentioned, when the chef goes to the market, no, and he or she is asking about the seasonal vegetables and then bring them to the restaurant, no, and this will take the lead. Now, of course, we'll still like to see the dishes and the art and the creative work of the chefs and how they perform, no, the stage during the experience. But the behind the scenes, no, process, it's, yeah, it's crucial, no, to connect to this, to develop this emotional connection with the customer.
Yeah, I remember years ago I was fascinated. I saw a cookbook. It actually was basically a excellent book on food photography, and was a Japanese chef. His name is Chef Mikuni, and I bought this book. And unfortunately, we never had a chance to go and visit the restaurant. And now we took him fast forward. The book is I bought must have been in the early 90s, and he was the big chef in Japan. And now. Now we are talking 2024. Now he's on Facebook or Instagram, and very casually, no arrogance or no chef manners. He's very like a friendly uncle who is cooking to you or to the audience, and he has a lot of fans, and he's making very simple dishes that anyone can cook. And because this is now his success, I think he's sort of a second run into success from being a very Michelin star, highly refined, fine dining, now to the uncle who's cooking in the kitchen some very friendly and easy made food. So I was very impressed about how he has moved on to something like this. And social media is now helping him to reach out. And maybe you have some examples of what you have seen, how from the sort of the Michelin star activity, you're becoming a little bit more of the friendly guy who is available to you to show you how to make something.
Yeah, actually, there are examples of Michelin star chefs, you know, who just left the Michelin restaurant behind and left the pressure, you know, embedded in this very competitive wall, and started to cook this way, you know, so as a way to get closer to the people, also to make the product, the restaurant, more accessible. Because of course, when we talk about Michelin restaurants, not all of them, but many of them have a specific price range, and we also see, you know, that some of these chefs, while they keep the Michelin restaurant, they also open, you know, new venues. You know, and here in Girona, as you know, there is El Celler de Can Roca, and which is the three Michelin star restaurant, but they have also created, you know, a range of experiences with ice cream shop, also a coffee shop based on chocolate, and also now they have opened a normal restaurant, which is called Normal, in the center of the city. You know, so also they offer this Roca experience, but different price ranges, so more people, you know, can also try, you know, this Roca brand, you know, which is well connected with the Girona identity. You know, at the end, it's a synergy, you know, that we create with the restaurants. Of course, these Michelin restaurants provide a huge visibility, not only to themselves and the chef, but also to the cities and the regions where they are, you know, because they are also advocates of the use of local products, local recipes. And when not trying to reach this or to broaden, you know, the target audience, is I think it's also a way, you know, to increase not only the impact of the brand, but also to allow people not to engage with this type of experience. You know, at the end, of course, the ice cream shop may not be a luxury experience per se, but it's part, no, it's an element which is also a signature element by the Roca brothers.
Well, I think that ice cream shop, I have only seen it on YouTube, and I said that I have to visit that place. It looks so delicious.
Yeah, it is. And you see in the summer, there are queues there. So people just making their waiting time before they get the specific ice cream. And here there are, they work also with representations of local elements, no, and the use of local products. And there is an ice cream which is evocative of, it is called, it's a monument in Girona, and then they make it tangible, no, through an ice cream, where in addition they use a local product, which is the apple, no, because the apple in Girona is an identity product, which is also recognized by a quality label. And they use an apple sorbet to do this this ice cream. So there are lots of connections. Of course, we don't have time to discuss all of these connections, but these luxury restaurants also protect and promote the connections, no, between sustainable production and sustainable consumption that we have not discussed before.
Oh, yes, very good. So let's move from the luxury bling world of UAE to something which is close to my heart, is bakeries. You made a research on the case of bakeries in Catalonia, and I think there was a case where, was it during the pandemic period, where and so could you just share the what were the challenges bakeries faced during the lockdown? What strategies did you see them using to operate successfully? And what were your findings?
Yes, we developed this project during the pandemic with my colleague Nella Filimon, and we analyzed. No, on one side, we interviewed the managers of the bakeries to see how they were adapting to the new situation, and also through different stages, because there were different stages of lockdown. And then also we analyzed. No, how they promoted the bakeries on social media, no? And here one issue, no, that it was common for all the bakeries was that these bakeries in particular, no, we analyzed bakeries which also had a cafeteria space, so there is a double result here, no? So from the sense of the bakery, they all agreed, no, they all understood that bread is a basic need, so they also highlighted, no, this role as city protectors, no, to some extent, in the sense that they needed to bake the bread every day and to open every day, so they can also meet, no, of course, the customer needs in relation to this product and all the products, no, that are part of the bakeries. Then also the situation that came as a result of the closure of the cafeterias, no, which in most cases is the element that provides more revenue, no, and this also meant that they had a difficult time, no, in finding a balance, no, between a situation where they needed to be open because as a basic facility they needed to continue to provide the bread even in the most difficult days of the pandemic. Also including personal situations, no, in the own businesses, and then this combined, no, with the loss of most of the revenue coming from the cafeterias, and here of course I mentioned in the previous research, no, this connection between sustainable production and consumption, and this is really manifested here, no, so how the bakeries managed to keep, no, this artisanal production of bread, this artisanal handmade bread that they do at their own workshops, and then how this is communicated, no, through the different channels they have, including social media, with some challenges that we now can discuss, but also to preserve, no, the identity, one of the elements that also convey the identity of the cities, no. At the end, the bakeries are part of the city branding. They are a crucial business within the city structure, and they recognize that. No, when we talk to them, they are aware, no, that they are a crucial facility within the food system.
Yeah, I mean, during the lockdown, there was, of course, I mean, those bakeries who were on social media, they reached almost everyone. But then you have the senior citizens who may not be social media savvy, and they were used to go and get their bread every day, and then they were not able to get the bread every day. So how did the seniors were educated or to adapt to the situation where daily habits had to be changed?
Yeah, actually, this was also a point that they highlighted. No, there is a crucial difference here. No, because we've mentioned in the luxury experience examples that the social media, no, is used as a way to promote, no, the business per se. And here, the social media is used also as a way to create awareness about the product, in the sense that it's used more as an information channel than a promotion channel. No, and this also relates to what you just mentioned. So, yeah, they needed to change, no, some of the production dynamics, for example, making larger pieces of bread. And also they needed to do a lot of conversation, no, let's say in that way, a lot of strengthening this connection with the people who came there and maybe were not supposed, no, to come every day, as you said. And then the bakeries needed to work on these production changes, not to also influence on the consumption changes. No, if they are making like pieces of bread which last for 3 days instead of 1 day, this also requires, no, that the customer understands it and also sets, no, the situation. No, of course they didn't. The bakeries didn't mention that the rules that they were setting as part of the lockdown were not followed or nothing like that. No, but they tried not to also make the customers aware of this change, you know, in the production, which also leads to change in the consumption.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, during the pandemic taught us and everyone many lessons. And what lessons can maybe the small and medium enterprise learn from how these bakeries managed their operation during various stages of pandemic, because there is some lessons that to be learned from that.
Yeah, so one of the lessons, you know, that was learned, it refers to the process of adaptation and resilience. You know, and for example, when they talk, you know, about this closure of the cafeterias, they of course increased the takeaway services and they also increased the delivery services. There is one bakery, you know, that they were providing their own delivery service to the countryside, you know, of the area here in Girona. So they allowing people in a specific town, you know, to make a joint order, and then they delivered directly to the town this order. You know? So they created different adaptation strategies, which also show the resilience, the capacity of resilience, no, that they have. And this resilience is also a way, no, to communicate the customers, no, how they perform and what is their identity. No, because when we do something, we also show, no, how we are and what's our personality. And when we post on social media, no, if it's a bakery or a luxury hotel or an individual, we also are showing, no, through a specific post how we are and who we are. No, and this is also important, no, in terms of these actions that the bakeries developed to protect, no, and promote the identity, the specific identity of entrepreneurship through a product, which is also an identity product, and also in connection, in close connection with the people, no, which at the end is people are at the center, no, of any product or any service, no, that we want to promote.
Yeah, was there any difference in the gender, you know, of the bakery managers who were more inclined to use successfully social media and more comfortable to do that? Was there any difference, or did you notice any of that?
Well, the managers we interview, they were female managers, so this also not shows, no, that some of these actions, no, that I mentioned, no, could be gender based, and also resonates, no, with this people-centered approach, no, of these businesses. In terms of social media, here there were different strategies, and there were some of the bakeries that they were really engaging in social media, but other bakeries who were not really active in social media, and they use like personal communication tools like WhatsApp, so to keep the customers also up to date, no, of what was happening. But what of, all of them, no, use these communication channels to increase, no, these emotional bonds, no, with the customers. The end, of course, it's about information, about telling people, no, that they are there and the bread is ready. Maybe not every day, but every 3 days, no, to be bought. But also, of course, then as a promotional element, no, which as the pandemic or as the restrictions were being waived, no, we observed that this promotional element, no, it's again gaining importance in the narratives.
Yeah, yeah. Very good. Well, I'm a fan of good bread, and could you share your findings how this Spanish route of good bread worked to promote the destination? Because I understand there's a program in Spain.
Yeah, there is a route, and this route is a way, no, so how we can award, no, this value to bread, focus on artisanal production techniques. No? So how can we use handmade products as a way towards slow tourism, also as a way towards regenerative tourism, and also understanding, no, the context, this local global context where we are, no, where this industrial based food also makes the way to the retailing sector, and this route, no, is an effective way, no, to not only to allow people to know about this artisanal bread, but also to keep the bakeries, no, on the process, no, of trying to improve the techniques while maintaining the traditional way of making bread and using local and quality ingredients, because they also organize competitions, and then the bakeries use, no, these awards as a tool to promote themselves.
Very good. Yeah, so that's very, very interesting. I mean, this is gives a I read somewhere that there are 20% of travelers tend to, when they plan a holidays, it's all around about food. So anyone who, when, if they are, if they see some sort of a program or a idea of where they can actually have an enjoyable holiday and also to taste something new, different things, then, and everybody loves bread. So I think this idea of the Catalonian route, different visiting different bakeries could be a wonderful way of seeing a part of Catalonia that you never will see otherwise.
Exactly, and here there are also different strategies, no, from an entrepreneurship perspective, where we can connect bread with other products, no. And now, for example, in autumn, they make a chestnut bread, no, using like chestnuts, or pumpkin bread using the pumpkin, and it's also similar with other products like cheese, for example, no, where we can really create relationships between producers, where through bread, in this case, we can also protect and promote, no, other local products, which also form, no, the destination. And as you mentioned, so there are lots of visitors who has food as a primary motivation, but even if food is not a primary motivation, we eat, no, when we travel. So and here also there is also potential, no, to increase the competitiveness of the destinations, no, based on these food experiences and also the seasonality attached to the food experiences.
Yeah, very good. Okay, that's very good. So we talked about the luxury gastronomic experience and also the case of Catalonia bakeries. Let's talk a little bit about your observations and also your article, how underutilized short-form videos are. And after all, they provide a way to deliver a message quickly and efficiently. What are your thoughts on these short forms? Is it our attention span is about like a goldfish, or what are the things that drives the message very clearly, and all the challenges related that you have to fit everything within a certain time frame?
Yeah, these short forms of videos, no, as we observe on Instagram as well, and also on TikTok, they are driving now the new trend. Well, new kind of new trend in promoting also tourism destinations and services. And here we did also a small analysis, no, on food experiences with my colleague Alicia Orea Ginet, and we analyzed, no, how destinations worldwide started to use, no, these short video forms, no, to promote the food experiences. Here there are also different preliminary results. On one side, no, we also find this result that revolves around identity, but around identity in connection with these global influences. No, and of course here we promote this fusion gastronomic experiences. No, where at the end restaurants usually create a dialogue. No, between tradition and innovation, between local and global ingredients, and that doesn't mean that we lose authenticity. You know, but I mean, as culture itself is not static, it's dynamic, and food as part of culture is also dynamic. No, and we also need to dialogue, no, with the different elements that shape and are shaped by our own food culture and our own food identity. But one element, no, that we specifically find in these short forms of videos is this idea of out of ordinary, no? So how we create these unique experiences, these memorable experiences. And I remember one video, I think it was from London Cafe, where they promoted a big croissant, no? And the people went there, just tried a big, like really big croissant. And then you got the latte, no? And you tried to dip the big croissant in the latte. And so they promoted this out of ordinary experiences. To some extent, something similar than the gold cappuccino, no, that we talk at the beginning,
yeah.
And this really works, but also works in relation to this behind the scenes, no, that we also talk as part of the luxury experience. No? And what happens, no, before and after we dip the big croissant?
Yeah, I also like I have seen on Instagram. I followed many of the pâtissiers and bakers and so on. And there's one particular pâtissier in Paris who is very often on Instagram, and he makes those reels, or they are very quite short, and the way they're very cleverly, he showed the whole production in very few seconds because the way they have shot the video. And then The more important thing is once he's completed and he has a taste of the pie, whatever he make, and it looks obviously very delicious. And then the next scene is that he's taking a tray and taking it outside his shop. And you have a huge line of people just standing there to get a taste of this. And he has become almost like an attraction for the center of Paris, where people are going to visit that area just to have a piece of that. And there's obviously no seats to his bakery cafes unless you book in months in advance. So, you know, so it's interesting how different cleverly curated videos and so on, and using that time, a very short time, to promote the point mix can make it very successful. But you have to be very active and continuously come up with new ideas.
Exactly. And I think that this is crucial. No, it's, of course, the way you create the image or the video, it's important, but the idea behind it, no, it is what it makes the picture or the video possible, no, and how we really identify, no, a value proposition which is unique and can create an out of ordinary experiences that is worth traveling to.
Yeah, exactly. Well, we're going to jump over to Greenland for a moment with the taking a different approach here. So, and this will be formed as part of episode 2 with you, Francesc. So we are, episode 1 is about the culinary bakeries and luxury restaurants and we touched on so many things. But now the portrayal of Greenland, a visual analysis of its digital storytelling. Could you elaborate on the main themes observed in Greenland's digital storytelling? Because you made an article about this.
Yes, we analyzed the visual storytelling of Greenland from the perspective of the destination. So as a way to understand how Greenland wants the world to see it. We found some things which may sound obvious, that is this environmental driven content, so where nature is the main factor that is used in this storytelling, but also the forms that nature takes. And here we observe the mountains, so we observe, of course, ice, snow, water, and all of these environmental elements that convince Greenland as a nature-based destination.
Yeah. How do you compare? I mean, if you compare, Greenland is very exotic to a lot of people, and most people haven't been there. But then you're looking at the digital storytelling of Greenland to maybe other popular destinations. Are there any unique aspects of to Greenland's narrative?
Yeah, I mean, here there could be other examples, of destinations where also this storytelling is also built on nature, But of course, this environmental factors, contributing to the landscapes and lifestyles of Greenland are crucial, to portray Greenland on these social media platforms. But if I think about the most specific element to the storytelling, I would say this culture in nature concept that they communicate. So they often portray the immensity of the nature through these snow landscapes, also the water and the ice. But then it's also often that we see in the pictures the colorful houses that form these small villages. And this could be like the identity image. So a small village with the colorful houses in some small place in the picture, and then all the other parts of the picture, the immensity of nature. And yes, probably this shows of the small role of people within the big place of nature that Greenland is.
Yeah, absolutely. There's an interesting YouTube channel from Greenland which I follow, and they're making these shorts, and they make in 60 seconds to tell you the national dress of Greenland and what's the difference with them, and so they give you a very wide aspect. So I'm jumping a little bit into the YouTube aspect. You see that YouTube is also a very powerful medium for compared to the TikToks and the Instagrams, or maybe it's reaching a different audience, or how do you see it?
Yeah, I think that with the emergence and consolidation of Instagram and then also the use of TikTok with these short forms of videos makes YouTube targeting different audiences with more paused contents where you can engage in a different manner with the way to create this storytelling. And of course, there are lots of destinations that combine both channels, but the type of content it's different for sure, and also the target audience they have.
Sure. So I mean, you have made extensive research here. What recommendations would you give to Greenland's tourism marketeers to enhance their storytelling technique for a digital audience? Or are they doing something that maybe they can do better? Or what are your thoughts?
Greenland is an adventure-based destination. Also, is a destination for tourists, and of course, this is framed within this nature-based tourism attraction. But one element that we find that is underrepresented, for example, in the visual narratives, is gastronomy. We were looking at the overall image that they create, and we found that they have a very limited numbers of pictures showing this foot heritage role in tourism. And probably, given that they are opening, not to welcoming more tourists in the near future, gastronomy, you know, as part of the Greenlandic culture, could be a way, you know, to protect and promote also the Greenlandic identity, not beyond nature, but as part of nature, no, because food as well is really connected with nature.
Yeah, I agree with you. Very good. Well, I have, Francesc, this has been a very, very interesting discussion because we've been jumping and you've very graciously been, you're coping with my jumping from different destinations very nicely. But I have two more questions for you before we wrap up. One question that I always ask my guests, besides what we have talked about, what are some trends that you see happening in hospitality that the hospitality professionals should take note of now?
Well, I would say two things. No, one thing is that we need to be creative to keep a balance between high tech and high touch, because hospitality and tourism are industries or systems which rely on high touch component. And now the high tech component has been increased the role, you know, that it plays in both the production and the consumption of experiences. And we need to think, you know, about how to balance, you know, both elements. And the other thing is that also in terms of management and marketing, you know, we need to create narratives which are evocative of our identity, which show our personality, and that rely on the behind the scenes. No, so what's the unique way we do the things that we do, how we do, and why we do? No, to see, because it's easy that customers see what we do and even how we do. No, but the reason behind what we do and how we do, it's important not to show, including these behind the scenes processes that not easy to see at some points.
Well, thank you. And my final question, if people are interested to find out more about your work, how can they reach you and where can they find you to read about your articles and communicate?
So I'm happy that they can find on my ResearchGate and also at my university profile at the University of Girona. They will also find my email if they want to share their thoughts or comment on anything.
Well, thank you. My guest today was Francesc Fustet-Fornet, and he talked about the social media aspects and utilization of social media for in during the different stages. One was the pandemic for the Catalonian bakery, and also the luxury culinary experiences in the United Arab Emirates. So, Francesc, it has been really a pleasure, and so thank you very much for taking the time. I truly enjoyed this discussion, and I'm looking very much forward to find a nice episode again and topic to talk to you again. Thank you so much.
Many thanks, Amerik, for the invitation and all the people for listening. It's been my pleasure being here today.